it's time for Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. Anthony.
Hello.
Dwayne.
Hello.
Niall. And me, Brian. That's triggered my memory of what happened in Let's Go Muko, at least.
Let's Go Muko.
Let's Go Muko.
The music podcast about Lovey Muko.
There we go. Gmail's find me notes. So, was there any... I think there was some JoJo's news, but I forgot to write it down.
They revealed some more visuals from the upcoming series, and it said who's going to be performing the opening theme.
Uh-huh.
Oh, anyone worthwhile?
I don't know. Because the opening themes are good, but like, the real mystery all surrounds what's the ending theme going to be.
The end theme is where it's at, man.
What popular classic rock song will this be?
True.
classic pop or progressive rock, we don't know.
We shall find out. Maybe it'll be rap, like the advert suggested.
I'd like it to be something to do with neighborhoods or something, you know? There's got to be something. There's got to be a song that has like that kind of theme.
Well, there's the Sesame Street song, Who Are the People in Your Neighborhood?
Yeah, that's the one I have in mind. But other than that, I can't think of any other one.
I'm sure that'll make a great music video, AMV, at some point in the future.
Did New Kids on the Block ever have a song about themselves?
No, Backstreet Boys did. As
Bashy's back,
Bashy's
then.
Back. Yeah.
There we go. See, done and dusted.
And that's already been used in a JoJo's video. Right. Okay, let's get on with the anime we actually watched. And we'll start with Dragon Ball Super. I told you guys to watch it, so I
know
you
did. I watched it just
I watched
just
it, yeah,
before.
It's all right.
Just in time.
Because it was a good one, and this one was called, let me find it here, Tsuzuno, Ask the Whereabouts of the Super Dragon Balls. Mm-hmm. And so this episode, it was all Jacko and Bulma all the time, pretty much. As she'd called Jacko in the previous episodes, he finally turned up, and she wanted him to take her to the centre of the universe. And he's like, the universe is really big, you don't even know where the centre is. And so he's sort of trying to put off going with her.
Yeah. Out of his jurisdiction.
Yes, yeah. On the way, though, he got mad and blew up a meteor and accidentally destroyed... What's it called?
A national monument, but I assume they mean, like, national to the Milky Way or something.
I don't... Yeah. I think it was called, like, the National Monument of Space. One of the national monuments of space he'd blown up.
In memory of space.
And so he blamed it on this space criminal, whose name...
Yeah, what was his name? Like, Burp Man?
That was it, yes.
Burp Man.
Burp Man. He's a frog man who's wanted for repeated hit and runnings.
Eat and run. If it was hit and run, it's like, oh, that's a very serious... No, he went to a restaurant, ate the food, and didn't pay. Several times. To the extent that the Galactic Police are after him.
The Snatch Bandit.
That's a lot of eat and runs to get that kind of attention. Yeah. I think the local authorities could take care of that.
The Galactic Police is like, no, top 10 most wanted list.
It was nice to see Toriyama do like an old frog guy, like your man. Was his name just Froggy?
Frog from Chrono Trigger, yeah.
Yeah. I haven't seen him do a frog in ages. Now that I think about it, your Ginyu was fucking a frog there.
Yes. I think there might have been amongst the Freezer Force in there.
There probably was a couple of frogs, yeah.
I think there's a frog lurking around in there as well.
I do like his frogs. This one was a muscly frog.
Yeah, so Jacko remembers that there's a planet nearby where this guy called Zuno lives, and he's able to answer any question you've got.
I have so many questions about this guy, right?
Is that your first
where did
one?
He come from? Why is his planet in a box? There's a lot of questions here.
Yeah, his planet looks like something that was like you roll up in Katamari Damas here or something.
Yeah, it's a bit mad, all right.
Is there a limit to how many questions you can ask?
Well,
like
you'll get to that.
A true Dragon Ball
Yes, there is. It all depends on what you offer him. So they agree to go, and Vegeta, of course, warns Jacko not to try anything with his wife when they're alone together. To which Jacko does this ridiculous mime as if to say, I'm not interested in her? An old woman like her.
How would you mime that?
Is he only saying that to Jacko? Because generally he doesn't need to say that to people, but is he saying that to Jacko because Jacko had some interest in her sister?
Yeah, I think it's because they've known each other longer than...
Vegeta's known her. Yeah, okay.
And it's, of course, also ridiculous that Jacko is saying that she's too old for him when he's far older than she is.
Yeah. It's a bit odd. But everyone just likes Colin Bulma out in that for some reason.
Yeah, he's constantly just giving a shit about this for the whole episode and so other characters. Like, what the fuck is up with this? I know this is the way fun Japanese society is, you know, where, like, once you're past the age of 25, you're an old maid, but this is still, like, pretty grievous.
Yeah, yeah.
We get a flashback to toddler Bulma, who was able to fly Jacko's spacecraft even as a kid.
They should have just straight up drawn her as, like, your one from Dr. Slump. You know, just made her, like, the super nerdy kid. But, yeah, it's just like, oh, I'm a super genius baby. I can fly a spaceship. And he's just freaking out.
And he's saying you'd have made a good...
that was, like, again, woman. That's... The freaking Toriyama thing. It's like, hey, Bulma, you could have been the star of your own series. And she's like, don't worry, I'm happy being a mother and a wife. And it's like,
I think that's because that was an idea they used in one of his one-shots he did with the Zetman creator, whose name escapes me at the moment. He did a couple of Galactic Patrol one-shots with him, and one was about them trying to recruit humans.
Okay.
So I think it was just like a callback to that idea. And who knows, maybe it'll play out 100 episodes down the line in Dragon Ball Super.
maybe by Bomber's wish, maybe the chief of the Galactic Patrol. Bing!
Well, yeah, I'm going to laugh if the wish turns out for him. Jacko uses it to repair that monument he blew up earlier in the series. So they get to the planet. So they get to the planet, and there's a 7-year waiting list.
Oh, to ask a question.
Yes.
7 years.
And
a lot of sevens in this thing. Yeah.
And then Burp Man shows up.
Priorly booked an appointment 7 years ago. Yeah.
And Jacko's like, if I arrest him, then I'm going to get in trouble for blowing up that monument because I've blamed him. I've blamed it on him. But if I arrest him, then we can take his place in the queue.
I did like the logic of him is like, I'm going to ask him how I can get away with, like, dine and dashing. And it's like, but you've been doing that for at least 7 years now.
but he's got a record for it. So obviously, there's room for improvement.
And so Bulma was like, "Oh well, never mind. I'm sure Beerus was only
straight away.
Was only joking. I think she's trying to guilt trip him.
That would make sense more so for her. Yeah, okay.
I'm sure Beerus, because it's the line that I'm sure Beerus was only joking when he said he'd destroy the universe.
Oh dear.
And so Jacko arrests Burtman, and they get his slot because Burtman tries to hold some of Zuno's retainers hostage. So they're very grateful and let them come in. And he basically says, you've got to give me a gift. And so Jacko gives him the gift of kissing him on the cheek. And he says, well, as you're a man, you only get one wish. And one question, rather. And so it's a proof that this guy answers all questions truthfully. He asks Zuno Bulma's bra size.
Yep. And he not only says that, but he says that what it's been reduced because of her aging.
Yes.
Which is just like, God damn it, guys, stop shitting on Bulma.
Relentless.
But the show has been obsessed with her breasts since the very start.
I know. Yeah. But you think they'd get over it by now, but nope.
No. So it's aimed at the dads who were kids watching the original show. I can't believe kids are interested in a show where the main characters' ages are referred to constantly.
And they're older than the age of school. Yeah.
It's like all the heroes are the same age as your mum and dad. Enjoy watching this while you're waiting for One Piece. And the ratings say, no, they don't. A lot of them don't bother tuning in that early.
Oh, dear.
I mean, more than Toriko, though, so that's fine. And so then Bulma kisses him, and as she's a woman, she gets three, but only three because she's a little older.
And not his type.
His tastes.
Yeah.
And so, of course, you get the old accidentally asking questions.
So it's like, so wait, I get three questions. And it's like, that's one question?
Yes.
And it's like, son of a bitch. Yeah.
So then she asks him, tell me everything you know about the Super Dragon Balls. And then he tells her everything he knows about the Super Dragon Balls really quickly, including an excuse for the animators to draw the stars on the Super Dragon Balls.
I love that excuse. That is actually really good.
Whatever angle you look at these Dragon Balls, you'll be able to see the stars.
Yeah, that's actually the light refracting in the ball that appears like that star shape from any angle. I was like, that's actually really good. It's dumb, but I like it.
And I forgot to take a note of what the dragon emperor is that apparently built these balls.
Zalama.
That's it. And the key thing is there's seven balls, but they're spread out over both the universes, six and seven.
Yeah.
And so that so Bulma's like, ah, that sneaky champa. He's been sneaking into our universe and stealing our balls.
Oh, dear. Since he already has six, even if they find the seventh, they're not going to be able to, you know, take the wish away from Beerus altogether. They still have to have the tournament, is what I mean.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so they go back home. Jacko is cheekily telling Goku what happened.
Yes. I like the way they're both kind of squatting over to the side. It's like, hey, I found a Bulma's bra size. I asked the guy a question. And Goku's like, oh, yeah?
Oh, and the other thing...
He's not interested in, like, any way other than it's like, ooh, gossip, okay.
And what's the bit... I can't remember where it falls. I think it's while they're off-planet. You go back to Vegeta and Goku and...
Oh, yeah, they're chatting about having, like, wives that give out to them all the time.
I said, oh, she's Saiyan blood. That's what Saiyan women are like. And Piccolo has this moment of revelation behind them.
Oh, makes sense. That's why...
Yeah, well, it's weird for him. He comes from, like, a race of just dudes, so yes. He doesn't get it at all.
But I like the idea that he'd been thinking about that all these years.
Yeah, it had been bugging him. It's like, why did they marry those assholes? They don't get on. And it's like, oh, no, Saiyan's like that. And it's like, okay. I guess that fills in a lot of questions. I mean, this episode does answer a few questions.
Yes.
Give it that much.
As it should do, because that's his power.
Yeah, it's a question asking. Yeah, exactly. Oh, and you have to recite some silly rhyme to summon the dragon? Like, pretty peas come out and play or something?
Yes.
It's something very silly. I can't remember.
So Bulma's third question is, do I really have to say that thing?
It's like, yes. That's all your questions. See you in 7 years if you want more.
Are you really the boss of all Cookie Marts? Yes, I am. Really? Yes. Really, really? Yes. Thank you. Oh, my God.
And then next week we get to meet all the other fighters, which seems to have, that was like really quick. I thought they were going to
really spread that out. Yeah,
oh, yeah. That's
But I know I'm fine with them introducing them all at once.
Yeah, I mean, even if there was just like an episode with just the Winnie the Pooh guy
playing poo sticks. Dan, I meant to watch this one. I totally forgot. I had it ready to watch all bloody week.
It looked pretty good as well. Yeah, I really enjoyed this episode.
Ah. Well, I mean, like, it involved not the bullshit we've been putting up with so far, so, yeah.
That's good, then.
And Jacko went off at the end, worrying that he was going to have to explain that he'd blown up that monument.
Yeah, he was thinking, shit, I should have asked.
But then he says he was going to take some holiday so he can watch the fight.
I wonder if he's going to get fired.
I don't know. Have you read any of his appearances with the...
In the manga?
In his comic, yeah.
No, I haven't. I assume he's got
Galactic Patrol management. Imagine the sort of guys who would employ Jacko.
Ah, okay, gotcha.
They're not that much more competent than he is.
Oh, dear. The universe in Dragon Ball is terrifyingly incompetent.
Yes, particularly when we now sort of know that... Goku's like probably the fourth most powerful person in the universe.
Scary thought.
dear.
Which is probably why they're going to have to start going to other universes for him to find people to beat up.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, they'd already been everywhere in the universe, in this universe, and in heaven, so they had to find an entirely new universe.
He's gotta get,
that's how power levels work, dude.
He's got to get better to beat this guy who apparently was better than him fighting Beerus, and then I imagine he's going to eventually want to have a rematch with Beerus.
Yeah.
And then probably want to fight Whis as well, like, just for good measure.
We also have, like, friggin' a whole bunch of other universes that aren't alternate. They're just completely separate universes.
Yes, of which
there's... So, yeah. You've all those things to have a fight with. It's great. If you're looking for fights.
Have we seen the guy who's, like, Goku from the other...
There is a Saiyan on the other side, but I think we're going to meet them next week.
Ah, okay. That's good.
There's a Saiyan, there's a alternate universe Frieza...
There might be two of them. Well, the guy in the frontier is coming.
Yeah, I can't remember what he is. I think he's something new.
Well, actually, he hasn't got the horns in his head, so he probably is something else. Mm. So a robot and Winnie the Pooh. Yeah. All buffed up.
Right, what's next? Let's go with lovely Muko. In this episode, Muko and Ushiko get jealous.
She won't stop growling.
The pair of them.
Muko doesn't know why she's growling, though.
Yeah.
She just happens to growl whenever Shinohara is around.
Oh, such a cute growl.
And then she gets jealous because Shinohara's hanging out with Komatsu. And of course, that's why Muko's getting jealous as well. And after all we said about how good the animation had been getting, this was an awful looking episode.
No,
I mean, like, my favorite part was kind of animation of the Muko being trapped outside and clearly growling through the window. No sound. I mean, like, that visual I thought was funny, but yeah the animation was awful looking.
I just kind of wandering back and forth, and then when Ushiko goes in, she's like going goo goo goo. Why is she crying about goo 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 goo? They're still like growling away, but you can't hear anything.
yeah exactly.
So I want to say this is the worst looking one yet, but I can't remember what episode it was like.
Yeah.
I think it's the model, the Shinohara sad model.
In this, walking along.
Yeah,
in the,
I don't think she's ever looked that good, but she's not in it very often, so you don't notice.
No. It's true.
But they've gotten used to, you know, like, trying it all. I was already getting it now from, like one more character is too much for them to handle. And all the house of cards falls down.
It's like, do you know how much more memory it takes to render her? Come on.
We're animating the show on Windows 95 PC. Give us a break here.
Dear.
It's Valentine's Day at the start as well.
Oh, yeah. It seems to be like it sets itself up that Ushiko could have a fated meeting with the love of his life, but instead he just passes out Shinohara.
The love of his life. He found some lovely, like, baked goods in the bakery he used to live to.
Yeah. Oh, also, Komatsu is worried about getting chocolates from the bartender, because that's kind of gay, I guess.
Well, I thought it was because I've kind of got that rivalry going on, because he's like, oh, these are really nice, do you make them yourself? And she's like, no, my dad did. And that kind of like, oh, because they've got that rivalry going on, you know.
Only in fishing, though.
I don't know. Yeah, they're buddies, but at the same time, like, you know, him saying, oh, these chocolates are lovely is like a compliment to him. He doesn't want that. They're rivals. Goku and Vegeta of lovely Muko.
Well, I guess only one has eyebrows, so yeah. That could work.
Oh, it's spring again, and Komatsu's ill with his hay fever or whatever else he's gotten. Doesn't she think Muko thinks that everyone's copying off Komatsu by wearing the masks as well?
Style, yeah.
And he thinks she's scared of all the masks, so he takes his off and he looks grim. His eyes are swollen up, his nose is running, and she's scared as well. Oh.
You know what, describing it, I think I enjoyed it more than I thought. Maybe I was just annoyed. Maybe not forgetting the crappy animation, I can enjoy the jokes, thinking about just the jokes. Mm.
Mm. Oh, yeah, it's funny. It's funny.
Just the growling was funny. I did like Muko singing with it. Oh, giving a package to Komatsu. Please submit to a Muko search, please.
And also, Ushiko's kind of jealous that she's getting other people are getting stuff and not him, and even gets offered the block of ice.
Yes, that Muko was chewing on. Also, yeah. He starts tearing the hair out of Muko.
Doesn't really get that logic at all.
He's no hair to tear out in frustration. Yes.
Oh, yeah. But Komachi was not impressed.
Yeah.
That's a load, man. Jesus, damn it.
Muko must be the most mild-tempered dog, because it's like a man is literally tearing your hair out, and you're just going like, ah, this hurts, but you're not reacting in any way.
Maybe she started bolting.
So she probably likes it. Dogs love getting, you know, the hair brushed.
Yeah.
It was a good one. And I like that weird CGI awful thing aside. It was all right.
Right, Mr. Osumatsu was untitled.
But they made good on their promise.
They did.
Yeah, we predicted it. It wasn't a hard prediction.
For about 1 minute, but yeah, they made good on their promise.
For as long as they could keep the joke up, which turned out wasn't very long. No. It became what? Shonosuke, how'd you say his name? Hijirasawa-san?
Yes.
Yeah.
And he had lots of brothers. And that was.
I did like the callback to the first episode, which doesn't exist anymore, so it's kind of a weird callback. I actually lost count of how many brothers he had.
Heptadactylopter, which is like, is that like 10, 11, 10? 12?
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure.
Probably something 17 or something.
But the joke was that he informs all his identical brothers that now they have an anime. And then they're like, well, we couldn't think of anything else, so. That's the end of the show, and that was the last episode of Shonosuke Hijira Sawa, whatever, San.
Mr. Shonosuke Hijira Sawa.
Yeah, I said San.
That is literally the only thing I remember of this episode.
Well, it was very scattershot after that. We got loads of...
I like the period drama stuff.
Yes, it was like leftover scripts from Gintama. They recycled.
That's possible, yeah.
As we got assorted Edo era... Osumatsu characters.
They're all two pairings, weren't they?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Then we got some old Joshi Matsus, the Lady Matsus.
Oh yeah.
In their old age.
That one's I don't know, the lately girly Matsus appear to have really like. I don't know. The first one was funny, and then it appears to have, like, diminishing returns.
It's not working for me anymore, because I don't know what it is.
It feels a bit like filler, particularly because they played their entire intro again with no new jokes.
Yeah, exactly. If they did the exact same intro, but they were all old ladies this time, that would have been fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I like that first outing of it now, but they haven't really done anything really...
Exactly, they've done new joke and no new jokes on top of that.
Nothing really funny with that idea.
I don't know, I like the wedding one, but this one, I don't know. I was the entire episode felt scattered, but it maybe just feels lesser because last week's episode was so stellar.
That's it.
And then you had a lengthy sketch about Choromatsu's self-awareness. And or lack of it, which felt a bit too much like the sketch where everyone got mad at Totti's rich life experiences outside the family.
It was kind of a different way of looking at that.
Yeah.
Yeah, as in he thinks he can do so fucking great, he's kind of an asshole about it. And it could destroy us all. Because it was nice to see how the other guys... I like the joke of how the other guys' self-awareness manifests. But yeah, the thing of his one growing too large was kind of, it went on a bit long. I've no idea what Juju Matsu thinks of himself, but that's kind of the point.
He's like on another planet, quite literally.
Yeah, pretty much.
Mm. Well, I did like the punchline of his brain completely breaking at the end when he's working as a businessman with cardboard mobile phone and cardboard apple.
Double click on the program. No. That's typical thing. You know, I double click on the program and click once again, and then double click again. He doesn't know what he's talking about, but he seems like he's very intimate. So I guess
he seems
happy.
Like he's a professional lunatic. Yeah.
It's like I have, like, you know, the the Beggars Guild, and you have like the King of Beggars, or he'd probably be the king of like the Lunatics Guild. So he'd be the guy top up on top, you know. He's got meetings to go to, and like and deals to close, but with madness.
Yeah,
but yeah, I'd felt I've been let down by Muko, let down by Osumatsu.
Oh, you weren't let down by Muko.
You're not about Muko.
You were laughing.
I was, but at the time I was annoyed at the animation.
And then Osumatsu, if you guys weren't on speaking highly of that show this week, how do you think I feel? I literally can barely remember anything from the episode.
I liked some of the sketches, the period drama ones. My favorite being the what's his name? The Totti and Yami one. Because it's like, I've got the thing that you want, the thing that you desire most. He's like, oh, is it a bomb? It's like, no, it's not a bomb. It's like, well, what is it? It's the thing you love. It's in this box. Just open the box and you'll see. He's like, no, tell me what it is. I don't want it. I don't want it. He's just kind of freaking out, like, as to what it could be. I that was a good sketch. There were some good bits in there.
I saw the Zatoichi Karamatsu.
Oh yeah, it was just the sunglasses.
I knew it was going to happen, but I was still when it didn't go off. I did like it. So
yeah. There were some good bits in there, but yeah, I think it was in comparison to last week's one as well. It's not going to look as good.
Up your game next week, or else.
Then Oji-san and Marshmallow introduced a new character. I think it's the last character to be introduced. I think Miyoko, an illustrator at the web-related company.
And she's, I'm guessing, based on the fact they've given her a southern accent in the subtitles, is from Osaka.
Kansai Ben, yeah.
Ah, okay, right.
So yeah, it's from whatever region like Osaka is in.
Yeah.
And she falls for Hige when she thinks he saved her from a train molester.
Broker. Yeah.
But he just accidentally fell on the man.
It's like My Love Story, like, you know, just in very, very short form.
That's true. Or is it like, was Densha Otoko? Is it a bit like that as well? I never watched that.
I didn't see that. No. I just remember being upheld at that moment. Yeah, this is like, one. This is like, you know, empowering Otoko ever. And I thought, well, I think you guys are too into it. I don't think it's as good as you were making out to be.
Don't need any of that. But yeah, so she falls for him and realizes he works at the same place as her. So she just tries to seduce him with her marshmallows.
Yeah, she describes herself as being marshmallowy. And when she goes like, oh, people have described me as having quite a bunch of marshmallows. And he's like, oh, really? You know, it's like you're marshmallow-like, but you're not a marshmallow, so that's not good enough.
And so every time she tries to seduce him, he keeps on saying the word toasty and wandering off. And then we eventually see that every time she tries to seduce him, Wakabayashi is toasting a marshmallow with a handheld...
a little blowtorch and, like, wafting the fumes at him.
Sort of leading him off like a donkey with a carrot.
I was going to say, like a cartoon character, you know, where they kind of waft after a scent.
Yeah. Yeah, like did Yogi Bear do that? Or
yeah, one of those kind of things.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was fine. I think it ended better than it started.
I missed the marshmallow recipes. I wonder.
Do you?
They said they'll be back at episode 9, they said.
Oh, thank goodness. Like, I'm hoping it's just like, okay, marshmallow recipe, here it is. 1 second marshmallow recipe. Open a bag of marshmallows, eat them. Done.
Is this the first time it's had a different outro?
I think so.
I believe so.
Yeah.
Because I never usually take a notice, but I happen to leave it on like 5 seconds longer than I normally do. I was like, oh, it's got her in it, so maybe it's different each week. Am I, you know?
I think it's been the same each week, but now I'm kind of questioning it.
Yes. Maybe last week was the brother.
I hope so.
Oh, dear.
I'd watch just the outros if the characters were in the same positions in those same outfits.
What? Even if
like
was...
sexy Santa brother would be hilarious. This is a good one though. This, like, you know, I'm not crazy about this show, but this one made me chuckle.
Like, yeah, it could, like I said, like we always say, like it could have been weak if it wasn't for the fact that it's so short. It cannot possibly outstay its welcome.
I thought he was being a little too oblivious. It's beginning, but that may have been because I watched Brooklyn Nine-Nine this week, and it was a Hitchcock and Scully episode, and they were really pushing how oblivious they were. And one of them's got the same haircut. Okay. He'd probably be, if he grew a moustache, he'd be perfect for the role. Yeah, but maybe my limit of obliviousness of idiots was already a limit this week.
Then you've got to put up with us.
I know. Right, erased. I'll let someone else talk about this because I barely was paying attention.
What?
I will say the opening was really good. The opening bit where he time skips backwards.
The world, oh.
If only, then I'd have paid attention.
Oh, that would be pretty crazy, actually.
Like, if he times him back and he's still being arrested by the police, they're all going to turn around and be like, dude, are you okay?
Oh. So who's handling... I think I could sum this one up pretty quickly.
All right, go for it.
I'll miss something out. No, I will. So we continue straight on from last week. He's in the grasp of the cops. They're putting handcuffs on and he's screaming, I've got to go back. And then you get the little time freeze, the water droplets are frozen in the air, all that jazz. And he's back. He's back in the museum. He's crying, you know, when he sees Hinazuki. Because, you know, he's gone through a lot. He thinks she might die still, so he's obviously sad. I was sad to see her again. Then all of his buddies show up, and it's like the repeat of that. Kenya mentions, did you read the book that I gave you like 2 weeks ago or something like that? And then
he mentions it's somebody.
It's an Edgar Allan Poe book.
And I
genuinely believe at this point that Kenya is also an adult. Traveling through time. He is too clever.
It seems to be kind of setting that up, all right. Or at least dropping that kind of friggin' red herring.
There's something he says later on, I was like, yeah, there's no way on earth a kid would say that. Because how old are these guys meant to be?
They're 11. Yeah, they're not even in their teens.
I wouldn't be saying this a lot. Either way, I'll get to that in a minute. So yeah, he mentioned about this, the book, and then later on he says, yeah, I've never actually given you that book, but I've been keeping an eye on what you're doing, and you know, the main guy, is it Satoru?
Satoru.
I've never thought about his name until now, which isn't very good. But he's like, oh yeah, I've been watching you, and he kind of says, look, Hinazuki's going to die.
Well, he kind of calls him out and is like, Satoru, like, you've been acting like really adult before, and I know before you were just putting on a face. Hmm. You know, and Satoru mentioned it himself, that he just kind of put on kind of like a happy face when he was a kid, so just so he could make friends. It's a thing just people do. They have their kind of public face so that they can interact with people. But and since he's changed into like this more serious person, so he's like, who are you kind of thing. So it's like, oh shit, is he like from the future? Has he copped on that Satoru has a different, well, not a different personality, but an aged personality or whatever, put in his head that he's that different. But
he says, no, I'm just a superhero. And he's
I just want to be a superhero.
You are you.
Yeah, okay, that totally sounds like something a kid would say.
Yeah. He wants to make an alibi for Yuki, the guy who does in fact go to prison for the killings and whatever else. And his alibi is basically find out which room his dad's in and throw a brick through the window and leave a note that says, I'm going to kill you. You will die or something to that effect.
Yeah, so the cops will be his alibi, which is, that's actually pretty smart.
It makes sense, but what if the murder's done on a different day? But I don't know.
See, the thing is, he knows how it goes, and he tried to change events very slightly from that, and that fucking failed. So he's just going, fuck it, I'm trying something completely fucking different.
But what if by doing that, Yuki is in fact the killer, and that's why he stopped her being murdered at this point?
I think he's reasonably, like, from how well he knows the guy.
The thing is, though, as soon as Satoru, whatever he's called, mentions Hinazuki's name in front of Yuki, he starts panicking.
I think that was just like, you know how like he's hanging out with Satoru, and like, no, it's just, I just of course like he's a lonely guy, and he's happy that he's found friends. I think he had like,
He's worried in case he's gonna leave him.
No, but it seemed like he had a similar thing. Oh yeah, like little girl Kaio. Yeah, I'm happy you guys made friends. It seems like that, but it's just like, you know, just framed in such a way now with eyes flashing. He's just laying down very carefully, like the
cutting knife he's using for the planes. Yeah, the craft knife. But see, I think it's just he's a kind of weird older guy who likes hanging around with kids and particularly kind of go, no, not in a bad way. He likes hanging out with lonely kids because he sees like these people who are alone. And I assume he kind of, based off what Satoru was saying of how he grew up.
He
understands them being a lonely kid. And he's like, okay, maybe if I like play with them and show them my model planes and stuff, maybe they'll be like, yeah, they'll be a lot happier and more well-adjusted than I am. So when he hears that the girl's hanging out with Satoru and his friends, he's just like, I am so fucking happy for you guys. That's wonderful. And I think he's genuine in that.
Well, that might come back and bite you.
It might do, but I like to think that there's some freaking hope for that.
I would like to, because, I don't want everyone to be this awful suspect, but...
it certainly gives you enough suspects anyway, so...
It does. Yeah. I think, I can't remember if this is before or after the birthday party, but he sees Inazuki's mother going across, like, you know, the...
He leaves actually during the birthday party.
While she's
coming back from work, I think.
Mm. So he gets the red eyes.
I think red eyes is just a thing of murderous intent or something. That's their symbol.
He's about to push her down the stairs. And yeah. I cannot blame him. I would have done the exact same thing.
But that woman's an asshole.
Oh, she's awful.
You can't do that, man. You can't do that.
Kenya stops him.
So. Yeah. It's again Kenya kind of being prescient. And he kind of just, again, unloads to Kenya. He's like, listen, that she's going to kill her one day. So I need to do everything I can to protect Keo
Hinazuki.
And he kind of just levels with him and lets him in on his plan, and it's kind of dangerous letting him in as well, because like he's one of the freaking suspects, for crying out loud. But it's like he needs to try something completely different, because slightly changing time doesn't seem to work. So it's kind of like in a video game, if you tried the level over and over again, that strategy isn't working.
Something different.
Okay, let's try a completely different plan. Yeah.
Then he has this idea, which I think is an all right idea, I guess, which is basically there's an old abandoned bus.
That was one of the higher clubhouse groups, or something.
And they're like, oh, well, we'll leave you here and we'll come check on you and so on. And this is the thing Kenya says, which is, there's no way a kid would say this, which is basically, right, make sure you open all the vents before lighting any fires, which, yes, it is common sense. But for a child to come out with that, it doesn't feel right.
I'd say maybe recently saw like an episode of, I don't know, I'd say...
Bear Grylls?
No, I don't say that, Mask or He-Man would have to post the episode thing and say, now kids, be safe at home and make sure you open the vents before you turn the stove on.
Or maybe his dad's a fireman.
Yeah.
Or maybe he is an adult that knows stuff.
They also said they were going to go camping in the summer, so maybe he's looked up as like, oh, we got to make sure if we have a heater in the tent that we got to have the place ventilated.
What if in his reality that he, one of his timelines, they die from smoke or something like that?
Concerned with like carbon monoxide.
So he's come back and he's like, well, I can't make this mistake this time.
Anthony, what if he's an alien?
Oh, what if he's a scout leader who's traveled back in time from the 33rd century to make sure that kids don't die of carbon monoxide poisoning?
I'm onto something here.
I think we're confusing Erased with Concrete Revolution.
I was going to say, and he doesn't watch Concrete Revolution, a show where he'd be getting all this.
Yeah. In Concrete Revolution, it could be all that things and more.
But yeah, they have a few days hanging out at the, you know, back and forth. The friends turn up to kind of do their part.
Yeah, they bring only Hiromi. They let in on, because obviously he fucking gets killed as well. And so it's like, we need to bring him in on this so we can protect him.
But the mother, Hinazuki's mother is still not reported her missing, which, because obviously she is missing effectively. You know, she's been
like,
in this.
I think that the idea is like the first time she rang Satoru's mother to say, hey, has my daughter been over to
she's
yours?
She's already dead at that point.
Yeah, as in the mother was involved in it in some way and she's just covering for herself. I don't know where my daughter is. It's like, whereas this case, the kid is actually missing. So the mother's not actually actively looking for the kid. Because it's kind of like, well, shit, I didn't murder the kid. So.
Yeah. She doesn't care.
The calling Satoru's mother was just like a cover for her, is my guess.
It is something as well, like, no, that's by, you know, trying to get the authorities involved might make the authorities are aware of like the horrible conditions in this home and the
Yeah, their hope is like that they're as they're talking out their plan with KO and everything, it's like if worse comes to worse, like friggin' the police start looking for you and shit, they'll go like, okay, so you were being abused and I'll take all the blame. And she's like, no, I'll just say I ran away from home, says KO. And it's like, and then, you know, we'll be fine. She'll get taken in by the authorities and her mother will presumably go to fucking prison for a long ass time, hopefully. You know, it's kind of like, oh, this plan is actually pretty good. You know, for kids.
Oh, well, yeah.
An adult
in a child's body is capable of. It's still a pretty good plan.
But when everything's going according to plan, there's something, a very sweet moment where they both stay over and they're both kind of snuggled up in the blanket and, like, you know, they pull away and it's a sweet moment.
That's actually the shot from the, I guess you call it, like, the poster that it shows up on.
Oh!
Yeah. I think that's it, because that's definitely on the bus.
They are sat somewhere lit by like a little, that definitely makes sense. But she's on her own one night, and the door opens, and it's not Satoru, it's not anyone, it's a mysterious figure that's probably going to be Yuki.
I'm really hoping the next episode will happen, and it's someone completely like...
Hey, get out of our clubhouse!
Yeah, it's just some guy, or it's one of them wearing a big jacket, or it's like...
I think it's Yuki, but I don't think he's there.
Eyes on his shoulders. One without control.
Little rascal stuff.
Yeah, big fake beard on. I'd be happy with that. Man, fucking, I'm so glad there's only one episode of this show a week, because I cannot handle this stress.
Oh, I could watch every episode straight off.
Really? I would die of a heart attack.
I think this is so... addictive. It's Moorish. This is a bag of Doritos. It will cut your mouth.
I can feel the tightening in my chest when I'm watching it. I'm just like, please let these children not die. Yeah. It's got me good anyway.
It's back on form, certainly.
I
don't think it's very strong in the future. Like, no, I'm dreading whenever the cops come into this now, because they've proven to be very ineffective.
Yeah.
They could be good at this time. In this era, though, possibly.
They convicted the wrong man.
Fujinuma from Tokyo City. Heard some kids got murdered in Tokyo a few years ago. Never caught the killer.
That's weird, because in the next town over, a bunch of kids died after that. Through completely different circumstances and a completely different guy who we pinned the crime on. Isn't that weird? It's like, fuck.
Well done, boys. We killed the fucking every unsolved murder in Tokyo.
Fuck's sake. Yeah. The kids are way more effective than the police so far.
Yeah.
Do you reckon there'll be like a Scooby-Doo ending? I would have got away with it if it wasn't for you kids.
Well, only if a ghost in a rubber mask becomes involved.
Oh, gosh. Imagine.
It's old man Tanaka all along, and Yuki was actually the FBI guy undercover trying to come to the smoking operation.
Hey, it's not a Detective Conan plot.
Give it time, maybe it will.
Oh, yeah, he is like an adult in a child's body.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I did mention earlier that the mum is played by the voice of Detective Conan.
Yeah. That's got to be a direct reference. So.
Yeah. Right. Anyway, I kind of watched the start and the end and skipped the middle.
Oh, dear.
I hadn't got time to watch it, because I was watching Django Unchained instead. And then I realised, I was supposed to be watching Erased.
So what did you do? Start it and then skip.
Skip to the end, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Skip to the cliffhanger.
Cliffhanger. I could figure out what happened in the middle from that.
Well, you've seen the prior days, so yeah, it's not as easy. It'd be easier to jump into considering you've already seen some of these events play out.
Yeah. What I did stick around for all of, though, was Psycho Boys.
Well, that wouldn't be
hard. Oh, yes.
what's this called? Civil War Brewing or something like that?
Yes.
Yeah. So...
Cinemas this summer.
This week's episode, the boys are going to go to a Dandy Two Men event. And they're shocked that Mickey hasn't heard of Dandy Two Men.
Quick question. Was the man, not the manager, the,
yes, he was dressed company? As Porco Rosso.
Okay. I just had to check that for sure. For no reason. It's just like, he just happens to be wearing that today. Nobody makes a comment.
He's the boss, no question.
He's allowed to do what he wants.
It's the fact that the shot from behind is,
yeah. It's like, I was just waiting for it to turn around on a pig nose.
I just like the boss just weird things with no explanation. I still, the top one is him on all fours on the desk talking to somebody.
He's like, what's his face from the first season of IT Crowd? He's just...
Oh, yes, yes. Yeah.
Bizarre activities.
Chris Morris's character, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they're shocked that they've not, that she's, this millennial hasn't heard of...
Sorry, you guys are like 2,000 years old.
And they get on this train to go to this event...
they don't even get the fancy seats, they just get the regular
place. Well, yeah, they wonder where Medici's wandered off to, and he's in first class, and she has to tell him off and bring him back.
Yeah, I saw that, like, Lily from the afternoon talk show they were on,
yes,
a few episodes ago, in a seat behind him.
I didn't spot that.
And they all start falling out with each other.
They all start arguing over who's the best member of Dandy Two Men.
Yes.
And then it gets to, like, personal insults. Yeah, they're really shitty in this episode towards each other.
Yes. I think Mickey says, I thought you were going to start throwing punches. Hell, never going to happen!
Well, Hermes has got like a kind of a stump of the arm. He could possibly
That's
do
true.
It.
Yeah, Mars makes a point that he's worn a new hat.
He has
a new helmet, yeah.
We got the recurring joke of Hermes not being able to find his face when he's eating. there's the joke where the Medici goes missing. They go, "Can't we phone him?" And they go, "Oh, he doesn't have a phone. He still uses homing pigeons." I do like a good bit of homing pigeon humour. And yeah, so they get to the event. Mira, the idol, who's a fan of the Secco Boys, is there. Turns out she's also a fan of Dandy Two Men,
which makes sense.
And then they really start going at each other when they're around the table at this event. And then Mickey is infuriated and yells at them, at which point Dandy Two Men appear on stage. And they've just been called, what they've been called, Bruo and Molly.
Bruo and Molly.
Yes, all the way through. And it turns out that Dandy Two Men are also busts. They're a bust of Molieri and Brutus.
they do comedy skits dressed
yes.
in Shakespearean gear.
Yeah, well, it's probably the best podcast. Probably like Molière's, like, wheelhouse more so.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
But I suppose, like, Bruce was in the Shakespeare play, so. And it's got some good voices here as well. If you have fucking Takahiro Kiyasu as Molière, a.k.a. Dio Brando. And other dudes, Keiji Fujiwara, who I know from a few things you might know as Lad Russo from Bacchano, amongst other notable roles.
Yeah, I just cackled laughing out loud when they showed up and they were busts as well, and who the busts were. Tickled me silly.
I mean, like, I knew there were going to be busts, but I there's no way of predicting who and what way they're going to play that.
Yeah, they've been putting pictures of Brutus up on the Twitter feed for a while, and I hadn't quite wondered why they were doing this, but that made sense. But they hadn't shown any pictures of Molieri at all. I do like when you do a Google image, at least when I do a Google image search for Molieri bust, it's like fourth row down, there's living Medici in there as well.
I guess it's because it's classical art thing, the running joke that everyone makes at Mars's expense. It's like, helmet and no other clothes or something.
Yes.
What are they, a helmet, no clothes or something?
Something like helmet naked.
And he's really embarrassed about that because, like, dude, why you wear a hat and no clothes? That's dumb.
And they're like, you're only in the band because you're muscular back and pecs. And at one point, Medici says, I look amazing naked. Without any argument.
I've seen the picture of that on Twitter, actually.
Unlike everything else, this didn't let me down. Or I didn't let it down either by not watching half of it.
It raises a lot of questions. Like, is every kind of boy band idol, are they all busts as well? So that's why this is like having it as one boy band composed of buses is just not an unusual occurrence for
everyday people. It must be, because it made Mickey turn to drink the moment she saw another band like this.
See, I think the idea behind it is, like, Buss are definitely pop stars in this, but this is like the first like four-man group boy band type situation. That was like a two-man thing. And yes, there's probably plenty of solo people who are just Buss.
Yes, quite possibly. And I think obviously the idea is that these figures were the idols of their eras.
Their day. Yeah.
And this era.
And this era as well. But obviously Medici.
Well, some of them are up and coming.
Medici,
yeah,
particularly is
the original celebrity.
Yes.
Pretty much anything that anyone who's had her like likeness cast in a stone bust is up for grabs in this show.
Yes. Yeah, pretty much. What I'm kind of liking about this show is it's very nearly the boring minutia of idol management. It's like, oh, and sometimes they'll have a fight and you're like, oh, come on, lads, we're on the way to this gig. But yeah, it just manages to cross it into entertaining.
But yeah, it's rendered completely absurd by who they are.
Yeah, yeah.
And we get there's a parody of like a TV show, which I don't know the TV show, which is annoying because they've just started doing a same parody in Yo-Kai Watch.
Oh, really? It must be big then, yeah?
Yeah, it must be a well-known show. Yeah, Jibun Yan's dressed as the same teacher.
So Jibun Yan is wearing the same wig that...
Yeah, with the eyebrows, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that one. Yeah.
Yeah. So it must be a show that everyone in Japan would know as a reference, because that's the joke, is that she knows that reference but doesn't know.
Is it like, I don't know, Biker Girl or something?
So he should be dressed... When it's adapted, they should reanimate it so she's dressed as Jeff.
Ah, dear.
Righty-ho. Anthony, I take it, still didn't watch it.
Of course not. Then I got enough pictures on Twitter, I can just check
that's
Twitter.
True, yes.
I'm like, oh yeah, I see that. I get that.
With the stunning voice work.
That is true.
The voices do sound appealing, but 1 week. Depends how much time I've got before we record.
You haven't got 8 minutes to work.
Absolutely
not.
And then finally, let's talk Lupin the Third. It's a two-part story we watched. Episode 11 and episode 12, The Dream of Italy.
I'm still so confused with this. I'm serious.
I think that's part of the point.
I am...
What are you confused about, Anthony? We'll try and answer your questions.
Well, do you not want to go through what's happened first?
Okay, so... Well, I was going to be trying to remember, because I watched episode 11 a week ago, and episode 12...
Yeah, I'm
now.
Trying to remember what happened in the first episode.
So, Rebecca gets kidnapped by MI6.
Oh, yeah, that's kind of messed up, because they're like, oh, yeah, so torture her until she talks.
Well, that's because she's gone to that building, is why.
Yeah, random shack in the woods.
Yes. And so Lupin has to rescue her... Robson
hires her. I guess he hires Lupin to steal her from MI6.
Yes,
because he's not a rescue guy. He's a thief.
They play a trick on every single agent in MI6 by making
that's fucking brilliant. Yeah,
yes. Yeah. It's not like coming a mile away.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, it's obvious what was happening, but it was really fun to see play out
and how it happens as well.
Yeah,
Fujiko, you're the best agent. Seducing.
Oh, I'm the best agent.
I'm the best. Chief, thanks. Now kill everyone else.
And then they try and convince Nyx to hand Rebecca over because Robson apparently has planted a bomb outside Nyx's house.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
You can see him kind of wrestling over whether to do this or not, but he went ahead and did it.
Don't let us go. We're going to blow up your family. Which, of course, is exactly the wrong thing to do.
Yeah, I love that all the agents that arrive there afterwards, because they're all very good at their jobs. They're MI6 after all. Instead of like the chief gun that goes like, oh shit, Nick's off the leg. Everyone let Lupin go and kill Nick.
He's going to hulk out and
basically, yeah. He hulks out just by veining, like popping veins everywhere.
It's the power of very high blood pressure and anger management issues.
And it turns out there's a book that Rebecca's got.
It was the
got.
Book that Rebecca found the random shack in the woods in.
Yeah, it belonged to a guy we later learn is Ko-Uraga. You wouldn't know that from the subtitles.
What was it? What was going on there? Is this like a JoJo situation where that's like a copyrighted name?
I don't know. Ko-Uraga, yes. He was a Rebecca's true love. Bad news. Sorry, Lupin.
The only man she ever loved. And Lupin gives him a face and everyone does a reaction shot. It's like, oh, fuck. Did you just say that to Lupin? Dude.
And he was a scientist, as we'd later discover in the second episode, had transferred his brain into this book that Rebecca's got. And by Lupin decoding it, he's able to talk to him.
Okay. Now, I don't know how you felt about this, but I fucking love this shit.
Oh, yeah,
that's
great.
That's some Grant Morrison shit. I love it.
Oh, yeah. It's cool. It's cool as hell. But...
And I think the... Because he dreams, and that's that freaks Goemon on out, because Lupin never dreams, apparently.
Is that a thing?
I think it is a thing they've mentioned before in right. other things.
I think it happened at least once.
They keep mentioning Lupin things that I forget, like, oh, yeah, he's in love with every woman.
It happened like at least once, thinking like Secret of Mamo, when he's like, Mamo's trying to like analyze Lupin's like brain patterns, and it's like, you know, it's completely nonsensical jargon in there. Is there the sign of a genius or a madman?
Yeah.
And I think that they got mentioned about the non dreaming in that bit, alright.
Hmm.
But yeah, I love the fact that, yes, he turned his thought patterns into a code, and when you decoded it.
It's unbelievable.
You could talk
it puts an image of him in the room he worked in your brain, yes, with all this weird ass shit in it.
And of course,
hallucinating or something.
And of course, he's been Lupin. He understands that's what's happening.
Yeah. He totally
genius
gets it.
Or a madman.
And he explains that you've got to destroy all my notes, stop the bad guys getting hold of it.
Yeah, because he's clearly developed a technology that allows you to put thoughts in people's heads.
Yes.
MI6 would love that shit.
And maybe they've already done that. Maybe that's why Nix is the way he is.
Yeah, exactly.
Because when Lupin's burning all the notes, Nix stops, rather than immediately catch Lupin, stops and stares at the burning notes.
Yeah, it could be like the... What do you call that thing? Like, you see in spy stuff, like photographic memory or something?
Could be.
Yeah. I believe so.
Then Nix pursues Lupin and Rebecca. But Lupin gets the better of him, because he's Lupin.
He's figured out that he's not a bat at all.
He's some kind of rat mutant man.
But then the rest of MI6 get the better of the pair of them.
And just fucking shoot him.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then Zenigata gets the better of MI6.
He's like, there were three different directions that the snipers came from and all this kind of thing. He's, again, being super competent, Zenigata. It's pretty great. Yeah.
And he's finally got hold of Lupin again. But the first time in this series.
Yeah, but it's not triumphant or anything like that. It's just, okay, it's kind of way that he does it for him to Zenigata as Pop. It's almost like this is Lupin, this is, like, his unruly son. He's like just bailing out and bringing home to get that. Yeah,
it's like, do you know what I had to do to get you out of MI6? You know what they would have fucking done to you? Fuck's sake, you stupid Egypt. They would have fucking killed you and no one would have found the body. And he's just like, you little shit, you know, he's just giving out to him more than anything.
Yeah, Pop, yeah, come here.
And he's like, you didn't even steal anything this time. All right, whatever. Fuck's sake.
The preview of the next episode looks like a lot of manga references.
Really, yeah. Also, he grows a sweet beard.
Yeah, because I've definitely got the strip that happens in.
Okay. Who's got a beard? Where?
Lupin does. Well, he's unkempt. You know?
Yes.
It's very patchy, let's be honest.
It's a nice beard, though. I didn't think he could grow a good beard.
Is it not just a fake?
It's no Jigen.
Well, we shall see. We'll have to find out.
Yeah, we don't know.
Well, you've kind of explained I must have blinked.
That was in the post-credit. That's the preview for next week's episode.
No, but I feel like I must have blinked for 10 minutes. Because there's a point in the second part, in the second episode we watched, where I was like, how is Rebecca with Lupin? Is he still dreaming?
Yeah, when he gets her back in the first episode from MI6, he's reading the book, and Rebecca's kind of like, not off like sulking or something like that. She's kind of like, she's initially annoyed because Lupin can figure out the book.
Yes.
When he goes off to find the your man's secret workshop or whatever you'd call it, Koro's secret notes, place where he kept his notes, he only takes Rebecca with him.
Yes.
Like at some point, I think she gets shot in the leg or something like that, so that they actually have trouble getting away from Nyx. That's when all that happens.
Yeah, that's not the dream is sepia. That's awake times, Anthony.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like it's clear the difference between the dream and
no,
reality,
but
there's no just giant bugs.
I know, I'm well aware, but there's a point where I just don't remember them meeting. It's like, I'm going to go and get her. And then all of a sudden...
She was outside all the time.
Yeah, she was just... They were in the same building.
Yeah, she was sulking while he was doing the research.
Because he can figure out the book and she can't, like...
I thought she was still in possession of MI6.
No, that was the last episode.
That.
He got her from...
Now, I get that. Oh, man.
You're probably just combining the two episodes.
I have completely combined the two in like weird German expressionism scene. But it was good. It was really good.
I like the play between Lupin and Rebecca as well in this, because it feels like they're like, despite all the prior stuff and her going and him like, oh, we're married, I got to get a divorce, kind of thing. And this one, there actually feels like there's kind of a connection there.
Well,
it's the first time it's probably that. And hilariously, she goes, actually, we're not actually married. I'm just fucking with you, dude. I never signed the papers.
It's a woman in need, and he's Lupin. As he stated, he's in love with every woman in the world.
But I felt there was a connection between her and him as well.
Oh, yes.
The other thing. Like, that was never really there. It was all just, like playful kind of thing. The same thing you get from Fujiko. It's not really there. It's just, like, this playful back and forth.
And we also got a pretty sweet, what looked like a Shinya O'Hara scene in the...
Yeah. Where it goes all, like,
when
wavy.
When Nyx goes crazy.
Oh, yeah.
That was really nice.
Fighting the other MI6 guys.
I find like in the second part, there's a lot of like dips to black between a lot of scenes. I was kind of wondering whether not there's any kind of meaning or intent behind that. Did you guys notice that?
No, I can't say
that's
I noticed
that.
Picked up on, no. There's obviously one with, like, no, when Nyx and Lupin get like get shot by the snipers, and they're obviously this is them like blacking out. But then there are other bits very round, like, you know, just like, you know, end of the scene, dip to black, and then it isn't even like, you know, just like the next day or anything like that. It's just like, little, maybe it was something just to show, you know, that some time had passed, but I was wondering, you know, what the kind of thing is about, you know, dreams and reality, and, you know.
Yeah, it'd make you question the
whether there was something happening, all right.
Yeah, that's entirely possible. I hadn't considered that, but yeah, whenever they do fucking weird, trippy shit, you have to question the cinematography as well.
Yes.
That always happens. Yeah, really good two-parter. I was really worried that they were building up this fucking Dream of Italy thing, and it wasn't going to, when they finally started talking about it, they weren't, it wasn't going to live up to it, you know?
Yeah.
But I thought they did a pretty good job.
Yeah, that was going to be like a longer running thing over the course of the series, but like
I guess it'll be like the implications of that. Will be the long running thing. Yeah.
And what the hell is MI6 up to with their secret underground base in Italy? Like, why are they?
I was wondering, were they hiding Pillarman down there? Because that's you hide Pillarman underneath like Italian
Coliseum or whatever.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Yeah, it is. Not as good as a woman named Fujiko Mina yet.
Stop saying that. It's
good, dude. It's okay. It's apples and oranges. They're both lovely.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. I guess so. Tea and coffee. They're both tea and coffee. Mina's tea. Because I prefer tea. I'm always in the mood for tea, not always in the mood for coffee. It's still good, though. It is really good.
I don't know. Maybe if you watch Fujiko Mina again, you might... revise that opinion.
Yeah.
Right, we'll be back next week with more of the same. I might even watch Dragon Ball again. I bet it.
Well, depends on how if it keeps up the pace. Yeah.
Yeah. So that will end this week's episode of Let's Go. Be back next week to hang with the Let's Go gang. And in the meantime, check out our regular podcasts at secretofthesailormadness.blogspot.com and dynamitingthebrain.com. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.